Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to bring you our first Sword and Sandal Cinema for 2024. I will start with the conclusion of A Legend of Hercules, BBC's Atlantis, episodes 12 and 13, Touched by the Gods, part 1 and 2. Circe demands that Jason fulfill his vow and slay Pasiphae, or his friends will suffer. He attempts it, but finds that he cannot complete the act. Ariadne assists him with escaping. Minos is a death's door. Ariadne's faithful servant is a minion of the queen, and the princess finds herself convicted of treason and about to be burned alive in the belly of a bronze bull. Aside from the mystic trio, there are others who serve Poseidon, Atlantis, and the king, a warrior, a priest, and a seer. Together, they rescue Ariadne and help her escape. While on the run, Jason meets his father, Aeson, although he remains unaware of it, and we discover that Pasiphae is his mother. He remains unaware of this as well. Two villains meet their ends. Minos is restored to health and reunited with his daughter. Life returns to normal for our heroes, and Pasiphae learns from the oracle that her son, who like herself is touched by the gods, is destined to someday destroy her. Then there's the documentary at the end, Behind the Scenes. This informative featurette introduces the creative minds that brought us Atlantis and the techniques they used to make the unfolding tale truly memorable. Fresh from their success with Merlin, also on the BBC, the epic production team mined the rich mythology of ancient Greece and combined the adventures of several heroes into a much longer and tighter epic narrative. This is well worth watching if you enjoyed the show. Alas, the show was canceled right before they decided to tackle the Voyage of the Argonauts, and now it plays on streaming platforms. It's also available on DVD and Blu-ray. And now, without further ado, Mr. Michael DelRussi. Greetings, Michael. How are you?
Greetings, everybody. It's great to be back here and discussing our favorite topic, sword and sandal cinema. It's wonderful.
Indeed it is. And it's wonderful to have you here. We've been having quite an adventure with Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, absolutely. I'd like to start out by reviewing where we are with our own concept of training.
Sure.
And of course, we were so powerfully influenced by the golden age of sword and sandal cinema. So I'd like to start first with what your experiences have been of late. I know you've been dealing with some issues in terms of a cough and a cold. So where are you? Have you been with your training this past 3-4 months?
Well, I stopped training for a while. I was just doing very basic movements to keep my body limber and strong. But I've been working out again with weights for the past week and a half or so. So I'm feeling very well. I've been looking into some new devices as well as reexamining some old ones. And generally I'm using for resistance hand grips, dumbbells, kettlebells, D weights. And I've been using elastic bands of all sorts. And I just acquired a new machine for my leg exercises. It's kind of like you can do it from a chair, but it exercises your whole legs. It's a resistance machine. So I'm looking forward to incorporating that into my workout. I'm also looking for inspiration beyond the purely muscular for my sword and sandal heroes. Like, for instance, Nigel Green has a Herculean attitude, despite the fact that he wasn't a bodybuilder. And so that presence that he gave off is very important to me. And so I've been modeling myself after that. Also, now in January, I start with Alan Steele, a.k.a. Sergio Chiani. He had an exuberance. He had an enthusiasm, which is very contagious in his portrayals of Hercules and other sword and sandal cinema heroes. So I'm studying him again to see what I could learn from him. And I intend to make the winter of my life the most interesting portion of my life thus far. So
that's pretty much the way I'm feeling these days, but I like your enthusiasm. And that's something I work on a day-to-day basis. And the interesting thing is, once I get involved in it, that enthusiasm is as fresh as it was back in 1969.
Yeah.
So you know what? And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. And just once again, Simone, to the fun that was involved in getting into the sword and sandal, the whole sword and sandal experience, because it affected us not only culturally, but also on a very personal level. I know it affected me that way. It was interesting to me that even in high school, when I wanted to exceed in the sport, and I felt, quite frankly, I didn't have some of the tools that were expected, I would think of my heroes. I would think of my heroes. They would come back to my consciousness that I would watch on the weekends, preferably the Sons of Hercules. And there was another program on WR TV Channel 9. I forget the exact title of it, but every Saturday night they would show a sword and sandal film. I remember seeing Hercules Unchained.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with that film at the time. So we had two venues going on a regular basis, thanks to New York television. And actually, WOR at that time played, as I recall, the largest role in both, because I believe Sons of Hercules was originally on WOR TV, as well as this Heroes program, which was on a Saturday night as well. It was a fantastic time, and that's what inspired me and strengthened me, both as a person and as a admirer of the great heroes of Greece and the mythologies that came along with it. So once again, the golden age still gets me all excited here in the twilight of my years.
Yeah, me too. And I remember when I was in the human services, I was at some event at LaGuardia Community College. I used to do internship programs in the field of psychiatric rehabilitation. And somebody had asked me a question, and I answered how basically when I was growing up, most kids wanted to be firemen or policemen or sailors or you know something like that. With me, I wanted to be a sword and sandal cinema star. And I talked about the effect genre had on me and how people thought I was fighting injustice for reasons that had nothing to do with the fact that in my mind, I was being a sword and sandal cinema hero and I was fighting injustice in my own time and the monsters of poverty and injustice and things like that. It was the only way I could do it. Wasn't a violent person, so I wasn't about to go out there and hit people or hit monsters for that matter, but I could tackle social things directly through my life, and that's how I played it out. And they liked that. I'm not doing it justice right now, but they liked that so much, they asked if I'd give this little speech again. So several times a year, they pay me like $75 for like telling the story for like 5-10 minutes at some function they were having.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was pretty wonderful. The fact that $75 meant something.
Absolutely. I would imagine it did. And that's a wonderful example of just what the influences of sword and sandal can be and have been. And that's what I mean when I say so often that brings the champion out in all of us. These films,
yes,
more than any other cinematic genre, if you will, brought the champion, inspired the champion out in all of us. And there's been nothing like it since. And I don't believe there'll be anything quite as inspiring in the future. There's a whole reason, a whole field of opinion as to why I say that. But that golden age can never be duplicated. As influential as it was to our heroes, especially in the 1980s, where there was a massive resurgence of muscular heroes, that classical body. It wasn't enough just to be a crime fighter or even a superhero. You had to look the part. You had to look the part. You had to look the part that the images that were depicted for us by the Greek heroes. So you had to look the part. So it was a personal challenge as well. I remember a great bodybuilding star of the 1970s by the name of Robbie Robinson. You may or may not remember him.
I remember the name, yes.
Yeah, he competed. He didn't win the Miss Olympia, but he came close. And he said when he watched the Sword and Sandal films, starting with, Hercules and moving on, Hercules Unchained, and the first thing he said to himself before he got into bodybuilding, he was from the South and very poor. He said to himself, boy, he said, can I really look like that? Can I look like that? Can I really change my body that way? And from that point on, he made his own weights in his backyard, filled the empty tires up with sand and what have you, and created his own gym. And the rest is history. He had a short part in Pumping Iron, the film Pumping Iron, where he was dancing and partying with Arnold in his small apartment. But here's a guy who started with nothing, could not even afford a set of weights, was living extremely poor. But what was his major influence? The Sword and Sandal cinema. And he took on that enormous, but it's such an exciting challenge, and that was, can I actually transform my body to look like the Greek heroes did? Can that really be done? And we now know that it can be done and has been done. So to me, that was a great story. That was a great inspiration to me to hear his story, how he grew up. And I remember even the wrestler, he passed away, I think, last year, Billy Graham, superstar Billy Graham, one of the first really muscular-looking bodybuilders in wrestling. He started off the same way. He would have made his own weights in the backyard with filling sand up, and he got an old pipe from somewhere, and that's the way he started. His parents weren't exactly enthusiastic about him getting into this mode of physical fitness. So you know what? It took courage. It took vision, and to look at the almost a divinity and what the human body can be, the human form can be like. Because we all know that's the way the Greeks saw physical fitness. It was almost divine, just as divine as the gods that were watching over the earth at that time. The divine force was representative in the perfect physical form. That's what the Greeks gave to us. So exciting. So you hear these stories in bodybuilding and the story you just shared with us, and very, very inspiring and exciting. And we don't hear anything like that today. So I just love to hear these, what others experienced through the Sword and Sandal phenomenon, if you will.
Yeah, and you pointed out something very important. The bodies were, of course, like the gods and heroes of old. They were very impressive, and they were, like a perfection of the human body. At a certain point, the bodybuilding became more than human, more than divine. It became monstrous in a way. And so it wasn't something that was possible to anybody who applied themselves. You know, you needed something different to have that type of body, the bodybuilder's physique, as they call it. And also with the CGI and all the special effects, in the original movies, you had the actual locations. You had ancient temples. You had ancient beaches and castles and things that were from antiquity. They were filmed in Greece and Rome for the most part. And this background was part of the background that the ancients always trod in reality. So that too, you had like CGI places, which they look good, But again, they were fake in a very real way.
Very so, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And you just during the sword and sandal era, you felt like you saw the ruins. You saw
right.
the ruins in the background. You felt like you were there. You felt like you were part of it. And you saw Steve Reeves standing there and doing what he needed to do and communicating with his crew and what have you. And you see these ruins in the background, and you're there. You are there. You are part of the heroic environment in terms of what was happening.
Uh-huh.
It was so different. And that's why I have very little enthusiasm for what we've been seeing today, especially the 80s. Some of our heroes of the 80s, we still had the original physique. Arnold's films, you were looking at Arnold pretty much as he was. There was none of this cartoonish-looking computer graphics, if you will. But since then, I would say since the decade of the 80s, most of the films that have been made trying to depict our Greek heroes, it's been downhill. I mean, there's no way I can look at these physiques that they're exposing us to today in cinema with the same awe that I still experience when I see the films of that golden era. I still experience, because these guys had the real thing going on. These guys had the real thing going on. And you made a very good point. Most of these films were filmed in Greece. I think most of them maybe in Italy, some in Spain and Italy. And you really saw that the ancient background as it was. So, you know, that was the golden age. It should be held up as a prime example of not only what we have missed, what the following generations have missed, but what we can still go back and experience today and absorb the heroics, the visions, and the images of just what we can do with the human body. That's what mm-hmm. the Greek heroes brought to us. That's what they brought to us. It's really exciting even now as I listen to some of the experiences you've had and what I experienced so passionately back when I was growing up, seeking out these films and watching them, making them a part of my life.
And they're still very much part of my life. So in your life and the life of many people, totally in our Facebook groups alone, for Sword and Sandal Cinema, the different groups, total up to 35,000 people at this point from all over the globe. Some places surprised me when I got members from there. And they're all joined together despite their politics, despite their religion, despite any other clashes of opinion they may have. They're all passionate about the movies for the same reasons that we are, and they share stories of their own. So I'm impressed with that.
I'm really excited to hear that. Have you been able to determine some of the age groups? As an example, are they pretty much individuals from all age groups? Or I'm interested if you can determine that, or where are they all coming from?
I never actually attempted to do that, but I can see their pictures when they join, you know, the thumbnail picture that everybody submits, and they seem to be of all ages, from very young people who discovered them later or watched them with their father once upon a time, to mostly people of our age or a little younger who grew up with them when they were still new.
Mm-hmm. That really ignites my enthusiasm even further. So what did you say the figure was at this point in terms of those who are listening to these programs? Or what number have you...
For the programs, it's hard to tell the way the algorithm currently is on Block Talk Radio. They had a very helpful one. The new way they have of counting things confuses me. So I don't know exactly the number who listened to the broadcast, I have like a general graph that shows activities, but that doesn't really translate into anything useful. On Facebook, there you have exact numbers, and there it's like I said, in the 30,000s at this point.
Wow.
So just with that alone, and I have other groups on the occult, on UFOs, on all sorts of other groups.
Right.
I don't count them in with a total for Sword and Sandal Cinema. Sword and Sandal Cinema is the biggest group of people gathered together to share a particular passion. So I pay very close attention to what they say. And I've started trying to make people be Sword and Sandal Cinema heroes in whatever way. Like I have champions of Sword and Sandal Cinema. You're a champion. Michael Waterman, aka Seton of Kemet, he's a champion. You have Diana Monford, she's a champion. So anyone who's involved in doing these shows has champion status. And some people don't really get involved with the shows, but they get involved on the websites. So I have champions from the websites, and I started like there's an old time Sword and Sandal goddess, Bella Cortez, and she's trying to get a movie or a miniseries made about her life in the Sword and Sandal cinema genre. And so we helped her whatever we could. Some of the hosts, like Diana Monford, helped her by interviewing her in Spanish and in English. And some other people in the group have helped her in various ways. And now it seems like she has a couple of production companies that have been talking to her. So, the Sword and Sandal Cinema group members were heroes. And they helped this princess, to get what she desired. So, that's one way we could be Sword and Sandal Cinema heroes. So I try to find things like that. It's led also to exhibits in different places by members, like their local libraries or, their service organizations, where they lent their collections of movies or books or art, and it was displayed there. Some of them have shown, movies that are in the public domain in local theaters. I was working on that before the pandemic, but the theater now closed, so that's not going to go anywhere. But to have like a sort of Santa day. So some people have done that. And of course, the biggest thing that people share is how, as you've shared many times, as I've shared, the inspiration to become healthier and stronger and to have a heroic physique by watching Sword and Sandal Cinema. That is something that a lot of people resonated with.
Absolutely, and it's something that I personally am dedicated to continue to emphasize, because how can you compare that with virtually anything else in cinema? You really can't.
No,
Sword and Sandal brought us something so unique. It enlivened the warrior spirit within us to actually recreate our bodies and our spirits. And that's what that golden era brought to us. What I'd like to share quickly, if I can also, is that anyone who hasn't obtained a copy of this magazine, By the Gods, yet, I really encourage them to do so. I'm very impressed with it. It's beautifully done. They have depictions of the posters. Everything's in full color. And the history that he shares with us is fabulous. They are working on issue number 2, which will be out this year. He said the response has been pretty good, but he's watching it carefully. So I would encourage anyone, please get yourself a copy. If his Sword and Sandal is lighting your fire as much as it has done for us and ignited your, please get yourself a copy. I promise you, you won't be sorry. He covers the entire history. And there's so much more to go. So it's By the Gods magazine. You can just look it up on the internet. You'll see where you can send your donation, payment, if you will. And don't miss this, because we don't know, depending on how the response will be, we don't know how long it'll actually be around.
Right.
But it's extremely well done. Very impressed with it. In fact, In a few minutes, I'd like to share just a little bit of information, the few minutes that we have left, and
sure.
If I can.
We have 4 minutes
like
left. Go ahead.
Okay,
it's yours.
I think I can cover this. This is from page 21 of the magazine.
Okay.
And it says, to be clear, the term muscle man movie was and is almost always used in a derogatory way. This kind of brawny action has been a favorite target of geeks for no other reason than ridiculing the popularity of bodybuilders. I could go on in detail about why this has been a bane of the peplum genre, but I won't. Hercules also became a game changer, not only by creating a new genre, but for a myriad of reasons, but also because foreign movies could now compete with Hollywood. There was no need to be a three-hour epic to draw a broad audience, and having no famous big star, aside from Reeves, whose stardom was limited to the emerging world of bodybuilding, muscles now became a thing, creating a new body and a new vision of what physicality could be all about. He went on to say that, yes, Hercules began the muscle men movies, but it also ignited an interest in stories based on Greek myths. This is where I became excited. He said critics couldn't describe it as a copy of Hollywood movies, since no movie on Hercules had ever been made before. It was also a movie that spearheaded the fantasy and action genres. Ironically,
yes.
the one aspect a few people realized why the movie became such a hit was Hollywood's near total indifference to stories based on Greek myths at that time. The name Hercules is still a household name. Everyone has heard of it now, regardless of their interest in things Greco-Roman. People now looked in this direction. So I really think that to me really excited my spirit to know the history in terms of, yes, this genre also was a vehicle to introduce people to the wonderful world of Greek mythology and its many heroes and stories. So that's what Sword and Sandal has done for us. So in conclusion, I'd like to encourage everyone, get yourself a copy of this magazine. It's in full color. I promise you that you will not be sorry. So I'm looking forward to the second issue.
As am I. Thank you for your gift of this magazine. I enjoyed it greatly, and I'm reading it again.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Very exciting to be involved.
And we have 2 minutes for you to share your contact information, where people can find you and enter your world.
Okay, they can write to me at Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey. That's 07006. I have a creative health manual that's very thorough, in some ways very unique. I cover all aspects of natural healing, from herbs to essential oils and diet. And that is $10 a copy, and they can write a check of money order to me, Michael Del Rossi, at that address, and I will rush a copy to you. And I also have a prayer ministry, a law of attraction ministry now, if you will, that I'm working on. And anybody that needs prayer or intercessory prayer especially is the key, they can write to me again. I don't charge for any of that. And I will counsel or pray with them, put white light upon their needs, their names, all goes on my prayer list. And I'm very excited about the work that I'm doing there. It's growing. So
I'm excited by that as well. And it's excellent and wonderful work that you're doing. Michael,
mm-hmm.
Thank you so very much, brother. And I wish you a happy and healthy new year. And I look forward to talking to you next week, where we'll be focusing more on bodybuilding and musculature and diet and exercise and things like that.
Very excited to be looking forward to it. Thank you so much. And everybody have a blessed evening.
And be well and thank you.
Thank you.
That was Michael DeLucy, an extraordinary individual, and he's like a brother to me, and we've been having this conversation for years now, and it never gets old. And now we move on to another great individual, Michael K. Waterman, known to those of us in esoteric realms as Setna Comwest of Kemet. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
Happy New Year, everybody, first of all. I'm
Happy
very
New
well,
Year.
As you know. As you know, I'm about to become the bankruptcy of Savannah, GA.
Yes.
Thursday, I'm going to be, from now on, you'll be direct from Savannah, Georgia. I'm very excited. I'm also scared, but all positive energy. Tonight, I want to present to you in more or less the vein of what Michael DeLucy and you were talking about, is a wonderful mini-series, which was called The Odyssey. It was in the 70s, starring Armand Asante, and it's about Odysseus, Ulysses, to people who don't know, and it's about Ulysses' contribution to what happened with the Trojan War and how it was kind of not going very well for the invaders, and they had to figure out a way to get into Troy. So Armand Asante is Ulysses, and as we all know, Ulysses created what? The Trojan horse. Now, this is some cast. It's an amazing, amazing cast. You have Bernadette Peters, who's actually a friend. And what I love about that part of it, as we know, and Setna Comwest will be delighted, she plays Circe. They take Circe as an ancient Egyptian priestess. And, you know, Circe has a thing called the Virtus Elixir, which is a very famous potion. And men are attracted to it. It's made of honey wine and spiced sour apples and vinegar and other things. And by this Circe chance, become what thou art. So if you're a pig, you're going to be a pig.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, you know, and if you're a real ape, you're going to be an ape. And if you're strong like a lion, you'll be a lion. And it's amazing. But it shows in the beginning of the miniseries, Ulysses and his beautiful wife, Penelope, are just given birth to their son. And all of a sudden, Menelaus, as they say, and Agamemnon say to him, we're about to attack Troy. They've stolen my brother's wife, and we got to go get her back. And that wife, of course, is Helen of Troy. So it's a very interesting beginning. And he just gets his wife, kisses her goodbye, pats his little newborn son on the head, and off he goes. And he goes to war, and the Trojan War at that point lasted 7 years, and they weren't doing well. They were casualties on both sides were bad. They just lost the hero.
Achilles,
thank you. It was on the tip of my tongue or my nose. And Achilles. And that was bad, and they didn't know what to do now. You know, Achilles had slew Hector, and Hector had killed Achilles' boyfriend, shall we say.
Patroclus, yeah.
Right, Patroclus. And that, you know, that caused the whole mess. The king then asked Achilles back for Hector's body, and the whole thing went on. And it all starts, of course, because Paris steals the wife of the king of Sparta, of Troy, I mean, of Sparta, excuse me, and that's Helen of Troy, Eleni, if you're really Greek, as Hercules is. And they run off together and come back to Troy. Well, that gave the Spartans and all the other Greeks a reason to attack Troy and take the treasures and what have you and make it part of their spoils. That's the right way. Would you call Hercules that way? It was a good reason to get slaves and treasure and all of that stuff. They all didn't like Sparta because Sparta was unbeatable. I mean, Troy was unbeatable. It had huge walls, and they had to figure out when they were doing so badly, how do I get into those walls? So Odysseus, Ulysses, came up with the idea of creating a gift, and the gift, of course, was the Trojan horse. which they then bring into, you know, into Troy, and of course it's destroyed. And that's all well and good, and they come back, yay, they've raped the city, they've destroyed everything, and they've taken the spoils. Everybody else in the war, the Greeks, have left. But now you've got the people from Ithaca, and that's where her Ulysses is from, and they get back on their boat, but for some reason or other, Ulysses says, look, gods, I did this all myself, and I didn't need your help. And he's supposed to be worshiping all these years. He's given thanks to Poseidon. Well, now he's really ticked off Poseidon. And so Poseidon puts a curse on him. And what happens is that the boat is lost, first for 10 years. They can't get anywhere. And they end up on a crazy island. And this is kind of a... Yeah, in a way, Ray Harryhausen situation, because they end up finding a gigantic cyclops. But this guy is CGI and special effects makeup, and I'm happy to say I know how to do that. Ogre slash cyclops has a taste for Greek food, unfortunately, particularly in Ithacans. I don't even know if he had I don't even know, Hercules, if he had tzatziki sauce or, you know, a little bit of hummus. But he found that they were quite tasty. So Ulysses says, you don't want to eat me because I'm loaded with magic. And the Cyclops is kind of dumb. I guess besides having one eye, he doesn't have many brains. But he munches on a couple of other guys. And Ulysses says, look, cool it. I'm going to give you a magical elixir, which, of course, is wine. On the boat, they have all these treasures that they've taken from Troy. From Troy. And they've got big vats of wine. So they get the Cyclops drunk. Now, he falls asleep, and Ulysses says, well, the one thing that we can do is blind the gigantic monster, and he will be able to eat all of us. So they do blind him, and Ulysses beforehand tells the Cyclops his name is Nobody, and they poke him in the eye, and he goes blind, and he's trying to chase after him, he's knocking things over and making a mess. Long dull story short, they put on sheepskins and try to escape as sheep. And there's a flute player in the place, and, of course, the guy couldn't keep the flute out of his mouth. He's tweeting away, and, of course, that's the last guy that gets out, and, of course, the Cyclops eats him. And then the brothers come, which is what happens in the book by Homer. And they say, what happened to you? You're blind. You've got blood all over the place. There's arms and legs of little people. What happened? He said, well, nobody attacked me. And they're like, what do you mean, nobody? And it kind of ends that way. And then they get on the boat, and they're off. And they end up on this island with Circe, which is Bernadette Peters. And as
Before
I say, they
Circe,
say...
Let me explain a little bit from the mythology. Poseidon's sacred animal, one of them is the horse.
Right.
So the Trojans worship Poseidon. So he took a holy gift to Poseidon, and the Greeks hid in it, and then they slaughtered people. And
the entire Trojan population.
They also raided Poseidon's temple. That's where they got some of their booty and treasures. And Polyphemus was the name of the Cyclops, and guess whose son he was?
Poseidon's, absolutely.
Poseidon.
So he added more insult to injury.
That's what Poseidon had against Ulysses or Odysseus.
But before that, though, he was making boasts that he did it all himself and the gods had nothing to do with it. And they that's in the movie anyway. In the mythology, mm-hmm. You're correct. That's exactly what happened. But they want to make it a little more obnoxious. So Poseidon is really insulted and really angry through this whole thing. And he has every right to be, I think. As a pagan, when you insult one of the gods, you're asking for it. And so he got it, shall we say. But so he gets onto the island next with Circe, and five of the guys get up onto her palace, and of course she does her thing with her verjuice elixir, and she turns them into pigs and horses and ducks and geese and lions and tigers and bears, oh my. And so Ulysses says, what's going on? And one of the little red pigs comes running back, and the other guy, one of the guys that didn't get zapped, says, no, that's our friend. Don't make hand hawks out of him. Don't chop him up. And they don't believe him. So Ulysses goes up onto the mountain. It takes a long time. And he runs into Hermes. And Hermes says, chew onto this like a grass. And it's an antidote for Circe's spell, because he doesn't believe in Circe's spells. He thinks they all think he's nuts, the guy that came back. And so he gets into the palace. And Circe, Bernadette Peters, is drop-dead beautiful. She's somewhere between a Greek and an Egyptian. The palace is an ancient Egyptian temple. I could move in tomorrow. It was beautiful. And you've got lions and chimpanzees and tigers and whatever else. They're all CGI, thank God, so nobody was eaten alive. And Hermes told him, the only way to get to break Circe's spell is to have sex with her. And from what I could tell, Bernadette Peters was not upset about this. She did a beautiful job as Circe. She was very seductive. And, I mean, she's a dear person to me. And she's very, very beautiful. So this is one of her more beautiful scenes and very powerful. And she regretfully lets them go because the spells are broken. All the people turn back into people. And they get on the boat. Meanwhile, Poseidon is, raging and doing terrible things. And they end up on another island, which is an island of Poseidon's brother, cousin or brother, who's the god of the winds. In Rome, that's Coriolis. What is his Greek name?
I'm not sure. I don't remember offhand.
I should. But the character actor that plays the part also played the part of the best friend of Clyde in Bonnie and Clyde. He's a wonderful little actor, great guy, they're extremely talented, and plays a really, almost a Wizard of Oz munchkin-looking character as the god of the winds. And he takes a tornado, and he puts this heavy, heavy wind into a big bag that Ulysses was carrying to gather water. Meanwhile, they're on the boat after this, and they're hungry and they don't know what the god gave him. And they get almost all the way back to Ithaca. And it's about 15 years. And, they are all excited. And, oh, my God, we think we see the boat. And then some of the, forgive me, idiot sailors say, I'm going to see what this is. They were dying because they were told not to open things. And they're like, my cat, if you say don't, of course, that's what they're going to do. So they open the thing, and the wind blows them back out to sea. And it's really awful, and they get into all kinds of other terrible things. I want to talk about the cast. The goddess Athena is played beautifully by one of my favorite actresses also, which is Isabella Rossellini. And she's, I think, at her most beautiful playing Athena. I haven't seen her that beautiful in decades. She's amazing, and she's playful and mischievous and wise and just gorgeous, and she does such a great job. Armand Asante is a very long, well-established actor, theatrical as well as film and television. If you watch NCIS, he was Le Grand Oui, which is a villain in NCIS, and he's a running character there. Wonderful. My favorite actress has a small role. She plays Ulysses' mother, and that's Irene Pappas, who's probably one of the most famous Greek actresses.
Yes.
Her and Capuchin, right? But she is, I saw her in Lincoln Center many, many years ago as Medea. I want to tell you, no one in the world did it like she did. She was amazing. I saw it in Greek and I saw it in English, and she was amazing. And the power in that woman's face is unbelievable. you know, and it's such a cool, it was cool to see her there, you know, working. And there are other great actors and actresses in the film, but the whole thing is, it's so star-studded and so action-packed. And like Michael was saying, and you were saying, this thing brings people back to the Greek mythology. It's
right.
Not just a miniseries. It really, people that, kids that don't know about these myths get interested. It's like the other miniseries that was about Jason and the Argonauts. It's the same thing. You have these great myths, these great legends that were, you know, kind of left aside for PlayStation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff. And that's all well and good. But we can't, was it Homer that said, or I believe, that we, if we remember, maybe it was even Socrates, if we forget the past, we are very destined to repeat it.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think that's true. As you know, I'm a student of ancient history, and it's something that I'm very passionate about. And I think we learn a great deal about who we are from where we were. And I've created something which I'm building now more and more, which is about different folklores. I think I mentioned, you know, I'm a quarter Polish.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who my grandmother's ancestors, I don't know much about the ancient Poles. I mean, I read about Slavonic culture, and the Poles are Slavs. But each one of those particular groups, the Lithuanians, the Poles, the Slovenians, the Slovakians, they all have different cultures anyway. They've all branched off. They speak different languages. And, you know, I want to know more about what my grandmother's people worshipped. You know, my other side was Austrian, and they're Germanic, and I know that they followed both the Germanic and the Norse traditions. That I know. And the English side of me, we know, have different Celtic and British gods and goddesses, and also Druidic peoples. Those are something I'm aware of. Also, part of my English family had a region in, I guess, York and Wessex, which is London. And so they came under the influence also of the Vikings. So I have Viking in me, which I think is kind of cool. But I've learned about the Isatru and the Viking culture. But to go back to what we were saying, this is going to bring you back a more interesting way now, a modern way, to look at a very wonderful, powerful ancient story.
Yes.
And, you know, what I love about it is through all of it, he thinks he uses his thinking process. He finally realizes that, yeah, you're not alone out there. And that was the whole reason Poseidon got angry. He's like, you're immortal, okay? You didn't create this whole universe. We did. The whole universe, we're the energy, the force. He's saying it in the form of the Olympians. But I think what he's really saying is the celestial, universal pantheons created the universe. All of them together, you know, as a one, I call it the All High. It's my personal philosophy is that I don't see anything wrong with almost any religion. As long as you're believing what you're doing and it's real, you know, I mean, I have one pet peeve, and I won't get into that on the thing. But I don't. I'm a anti-negative energy. I'll just put it that way. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I look for things that have, you know, good positive values, and inspire people. Don't make them afraid, and don't make them hate other people. Not to say my way is better than your way is the only way. That's my biggest pet peeve of many, many religions. My way is the only way. And I don't believe that.
That's one of my pet peeves, too. There are many different... I look at it like a wheel. And each religious path is a spoke. And you have a wide circle on the outside where they all connect. And then you have... a little circle on the inside where they all connect. And that's how I kind of view it. They're each distinct, but they serve the same function. And if walked the whole path, it'll bring us to the same place.
We all have what I call the soul path. You know,
mm-hmm.
We all have this little, partly it can be past lives, partly it can be something ancestral. I have friends that are, is not true Viking, for those who don't know, and Norse, I'll say. They follow that because it's their ancestral religion. But some people, like myself, for instance, I came out of a pagan group, pagan groups as a child, that were more British and Celtic, Isle of Man, and also England, and Druidic, you know. But that's not me. When they ask me, as I said many times, where was my path going? I said, well, my mother and father are Ra and Isis. And they were like, wait a minute here, where is that coming? What part of left field is that coming out of? You know, and I just told them I knew that's my soul path. And everybody has one, you know, and it takes a long time sometimes to know where that's going. And it, you know, and it can change. One minute you can be a broccoli and the next minute you can be Broccoli Rob. It's fascinating. But to do what we're doing, to look at these ancient stories, also, I think, inspires people to do something like that, to find their path. Ulysses was, through that whole series, trying to find his path to get back home. It's kind of like a Greek version of The Wizard of Oz, in a certain way. He's Dorothy. He's going through all these terrible, terrible trials to get back where he started.
Right.
And to respect and love what he's... And in the end, people like Eric Roberts, who's an amazing actor, Julia Roberts' brother, plays one of the princes who's up for the hand of Penelope. She's been alone for 20 years with her son, and they're all, you know... All these suitors have taken over the Ithacan palace. And she, because of the way they did things in those days, she had to capitulate. She just had to do whatever they wanted. And they had armies with them. And people forget that. These women were there alone, the slaves and servants, and maybe there was a couple of, you know, grooms or whatever. There wasn't much there. He had taken his whole army to fight the Trojan War. Ithaca was basically powerless. And, you know, and they don't make that clear enough, but she doesn't have any power. She's the queen of Ithaca, and she's stuck up in her room, basically. Well, they're throwing all kinds of parties, and they're eating all her food and drinking all her wine and you know, using all the olive oil.
Very true.
So what happens when he gets back to Ithaca, he goes first to Phoenicia, because he's able to do that. And finally, comes to an understanding with Poseidon. And Poseidon lets him go home. And then Athena says, you know, you've got a lot to deal with here. And he gets to his ancestral home. He gets to a farm where one of his servants works. And he sees the sheep, and he's got feta cheese and pita bread and Greek wine, and he says, oh my God, I'm really home, thank God, finally, thank goddess and God. And at the same time, his son went on a quest to look for him, and of course couldn't find him, and he gets back to the farm also, and the farmer says to the prince, don't get scared, your father's here. And of course he's like, my father's dead, who are you kidding? And they go on, and, you know, and then there's a beautiful scene where it's a reunion of the two of them. And he realizes, the prince, that really is his father. And Ulysses thinks, how am I going to, there's all these, you know, all these armies in my palace. How am I going to do this? So Athena appears, Isabella Rossellini, and she transforms him into a very old man.
We have our minute left, and I want you to have time to let people know how to connect with you.
Okay, and all I'm going to say, Pete, folks, is, of course, it was a happy ending. You can reach me at mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can get me on Facebook at Michael K. Waterman, or one of my pages is also Phone a Wizard, which is my services. You can get me at 516-650-3691, although I'm moving, that is not going to get off. I've had that phone number too long, I can't change it. And you can reach me, of course, through Hercules, through the various portions of his amazing endeavors that he does.
Thank you. And Setna will be on very many more shows once you settle down in Georgia, because we have a lot coming this year. And both Michaels are actually a very important part of the new shows. And we have in our audience today, Diana Montford. She's also host of Sword and Sandal Cinema. Let's wish her a happy new year as well.
Happy new year, my dear friend. I know you're there somewhere.
Hello?
Happy
Happy New Year, Diana.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the shout-out, Hercules. And don't forget, Michael, Thursday is the first day of your new life.
Yes, and when I go to bed, the lights will go out in Georgia.
Well, but you'll be the vamp of Savannah, GA.
Yes, I will. And if it's raining, it'll be a rainy night in Georgia. I can't wait.
There
I've
you
got
go.
Georgia on my mind.
paging Vicki Lawrence and everybody
Ray
else
Charles
is saying
and
all
Billy
those
Nelson
songs.
And Delta Burke.
Oh, Delta Burke is beautiful. I love Delta Burke.
And Diana is one of the champions of Olympus and the champions of Sword and Sandal Cinema for helping Bella Cortez.
It was my joy and pleasure to interview the beautiful and brilliant Bella Cortez, and I would love to do it again. And sadly, the station that all three of us are on, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, they used to put my shows on YouTube, but since the pandemic, they thought, well, we can't help you people with social media. So now they don't. And I do have her shows preserved on a hard drive. And ultimately, they will go into the National LGBTQ Archives because I'm transgender. So they want a copy of everything I do. I said, but most of my guests aren't gay. They said, no, but you are, honey. So, okay. But, you know, the wonderful Bella Cortez.
Well, I thank you for that. And I thank you to Sedna. And I thank you, Michael DeLucy. And I thank all of our hosts for Sword and Sandal Cinema, be they here or not, tonight. And I'm looking forward to this year. This year we'll all experience a lot of growth and find new avenues of self-expression. So thank you once again, and Happy New Year and success with your move.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everybody. And God and Goddess bless you. And as I always say,
much
Uncle
success,
Josh,
Michael. You deserve it.
Thank you, and blessings to all of you.
And blessings to you and to our wonderful guests, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called up and you're in our queue, or whether you're going to listen to us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
Good night.